This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guests today are Kerry Ray of GovEvents and Claudia Hosky of Hosky, Inc. and Fed Insider. And today's show is Events, Nothing But Events. Both these ladies are involved in events. I want to start with Kerry Ray of GovEvents. Kerry, tell us a little bit about what GovEvents does.
So essentially, we are the one-stop shop to find all the different events that are going on. I mean, anything from an on-demand webcast to a 20,000 attendee conference.
Okay. Roughly how many events do you have listed at any given time? Any idea?
Yes. Right now, there are about 850 upcoming events. We'll have over 4,000 that are posted this year.
So you're telling me that events aren't dead and coming.
Oh, my goodness. Not at all. Not at all. Far from it.
Claudia, I've known your mom for, let's just say, a while. And we met 4 or 5 years ago, I guess, when you joined the business. Mm-hmm. So what does Fed Insider and Hosky do, please?
Fed Insider is a six-year-old publication. We're owned by Hosky Communications. We have about 40,000 subscribers worldwide. And we break news, hold training events and webinars for worldwide audiences, and we help government, industry, and other sectors communicate with each other to improve processes. And, yeah, that's pretty much us.
Yeah, and a while back, I moderated one of your panels on fraud, waste, and abuse, and it was very cool. It was down at one of the Pennsylvania Avenue hotels, mm-hmm. and I had no idea as to the scope of the issue, the money involved, and how many agencies were involved. So yeah. It was an extraordinary event educationally for me, and I assume for the audience as well. So I know your stuff firsthand. So let's start off with the notion that GovEvents are government events, not GovEvents. Government events are dead. I mean, you know, the PBS fiasco followed by some snafus in VA, and it really irritates me that Congress has to step in once more to get TV time to kill mm-hmm. networking venues for government employees.
Yes.
More methane for your dollar than any place else on earth. Thank you, Congress. I mean, we saw a downturn then, but worse, we saw a shift in how feds had to justify attending events. How has that impacted either or both of you? Claudia, you want to start?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, of course, in the wake of the scandals, there was this sort of knee-jerk pullback of funding, of approval that rippled across all of government and affected a ton of events, probably all of us. And I think, you know, it's certainly gotten better for many agencies, but there's still a lot of arduous justification processes. And, you know, while some agencies have improved that a little bit, some really haven't. And a lot of their folks are still not able to come out to events. And or if they can, it's just not worth the effort.
Right. We're not going to name agencies because we don't want to make it harder. but, yeah, they do exist.
Yeah.
Carrie?
I think Claudia's expression of knee-jerk reaction is spot on. To across the board have a 30% mandated decrease in conferences and travel spending is crazy. It really is. Yes. And it has caused so many problems. She mentioned the approval processes and the paperwork. And some people have to get multiple approvals. Some have to now give 3 months' notice to attend an event, and a lot of times the events aren't ready to be posted 3 months out, so they miss out on some really great events. And I've been reading lately, a lot of agencies are missing out on kind of mission critical information and training that they need, even for certifications, and they can't go. So it's really, it's been a mess.
Yeah, these things do not occur by osmosis. You don't pick up information by sitting close to somebody who may have attended an event last year.
Right.
So the interaction with the real world is necessary. But that being said, events have, I mean, they've been part of the ecosystem since I've been in the market, well before I've been in the market. And we're talking 30 plus years now. Are they making a comeback? Was there really a, I mean, there were some impacts and slowdown, like Soup, for instance. Joanne Wojtek just awarded the Soup 5 awardees, but they used to have an annual conference, and NASA told her no. You know, the perception, you know, the reality of it was very low cost for the attenders, for government. It was funded by industry. It was held not an extraordinary venue, but it was a wonderful get together for both sides to discuss the scope of the vehicle.
Absolutely.
But they weren't allowed to proceed. So how much of a downturn actually occurred because of the PBS stuff? Carrie, you probably have a better feel for this than anybody.
There was definitely, and there still is, an impact. I think the era, and I'm sure we'll touch on it, of the big conferences.
Oh yeah, we'll touch on that.
Yeah, it is maybe past. I think there's almost a new normal of how events are run today. I think you're going to find, and we've seen, the event organizers really make a shift in much smaller events. Much more intimate events, breakfasts, lunches, even a few after work events, so that they're not, there's not that perception of the big boondoggle
at a resort.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. I mean,
play golf.
It's crazy. Anyone that tries to put an event or do an event in Las Vegas right now, I mean, that's you know, or Orlando, that those are definitely places to avoid. But I think they are coming back. It's just the organizers, the agencies are doing them a little bit differently.
I definitely agree with you there. I know in terms of us, we do a lot of training events, and we went from running multi-day conferences out of town to much smaller localized breakfast briefings and that sort of thing. And I think that a lot of the agencies have sort of realized that by this big pullback, they were missing out on the value that you get from gathering all these people together and these like minds to talk about strengths and weaknesses and opportunities and solutions. So I think new, especially with the new focuses on multi-sector collaboration, you know, when and where else can that take place except for events? They really can't go anywhere.
Yeah. And I spoke at one of your larger events also. I moderated a panel there. I moderate. but it was very cool. It was only a couple hours from D.C. It was on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. But I think, you know, give me your feedback here. I think it's important for people to be offsite and away for a couple of days so they have that after hours networking capability with the other people too, where real information is exchanged.
I completely agree with you. However, I wouldn't want to be responsible for one of those conferences right now.
I agree. I Mark, the networking is so important, and the fact that you aren't having those extended day conferences, I think that's one of the reasons they're doing the much smaller, more intimate, so that the attendees can ask those questions during the event. You know, a big event, it's really hard to have a lot of that networking unless it is after hours. So the focus of more intimate events where you can really collaborate and interact during is where you're getting that time.
Yeah, and you may have the intent of asking a question of someone after, but the reality is that 99% of the time it doesn't occur.
It's not going to happen.
I know with our events, we do try to put a big focus on opportunities to collaborate. So we'll create lunch sessions that are birds of a feather, or grouping people together, or certain discussions, and we try to recreate that as best you can without that sort of late night after hours.
That's why I had the table off in the corner with one seat. So.
That was the timeout chair.
Yeah, there you go. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I will be back with Carrie and Claudia after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower because nobody else volunteers. My guests are Claudia Hosky of Fed Insider and Carrie Ray of GovEvents. Give your website before we go on, Carrie.
It's govevents.com.
That's hard.
I know. It's tough.
Claudia.
And another tricky one. We are fedinsider.com.
Yes, indeed you are. And sign up for the newsletter. If you sign up at GovEvents, do you automatically get the newsletter?
You do.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Because and it's not intrusive. It just lists the events that are coming up. Hello. What a terrible thing. and they are there. Events happen. Yay. So let's talk about events perhaps that are not happening at present and may not come back, the mega show. I wrote the obituary for Fosse on LinkedIn earlier this year, one of my more popular posts this year, not because everybody was glad that Fosse died. Personally, I'm kind of distraught that the age of the big show has gone away. Is it really gone?
Well, you know, I think it's funny that you brought up Fosse because that was actually my introduction to events and trade shows.
Everybody's.
I think that's probably a first for everybody.
I may have been a younger demographic than most. I think in the early 2000s, Hosky Communications and my family's company were managing the
PR
press room.
Yeah.
And so I remember stuffing these bulging press packets with all, you know, dozens and hundreds of vendor information. And, you know, it was sad to see it go. It was such a thriving conference.
I don't think the era is completely gone. I think we might in a few years see a little comeback. But Fosse got too general almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of the players weren't getting their money's worth and pulled out. And the decision makers weren't there. I think the decision makers are looking for a much more focused event. It was heavy on industry. And I don't think it's gone. I think we'll still see some and they may make a comeback. But I think the era of the really big ones is probably past.
Okay. So the major multi, you know, I was on the board of Fosse in the 90s, and we legitimately had 50 plus thousand people coming through on three days. There was a Federal Computer Week sponsored boat ride up and down the Potomac, which was one of those hard to get tickets.
Mm-hmm.
There was a reception on site at the convention center for exhibitors and, quote, other privately invited people the first night of the show. Another ticket, you know, to die for if you were an exhibitor.
I'm sure.
You know, there was a number of events like that around us, and it was huge. And, you know, the event, I think this would have been year 37 or 38.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm sure that, you know, well, for the attendees, the value was certainly there. But I think to the sponsors, it really isn't anymore. There are so many new venues through media, websites, webinars, social media. And industry isn't wanting to spend an entire year's worth of marketing on one big event that, you know, folks can't really come to anymore.
Right.
Yeah. And Market Connections in one of their recent studies cited travel restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Claudia, as you mentioned, and Carrie, as your site shows, the rise of the social networking type event, the webinar event, the podcast, whatever. Is certainly on a strong upward curve.
It sure is. We in 2014 we saw a 30% increase in the number of webcasts and webinars. So, and I'm sure that trend will continue.
Absolutely.
The cost of producing a webinar is radically lower than exhibiting at an event, and you know you have your own audience.
Mm-hmm.
But the ability to produce a good webinar is not apparently within the grasp of everybody.
Right. Right.
That's
and
true.
Mark, you mentioned that the market connection study.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions they asked was, how are you now getting the information that you used to get from events? Where are you getting that? And it was in the 70s, maybe 78%, 75% said they're getting the information from webinars.
Yeah.
So people need to get on board and hear that's the...
It's a viable tool.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Claudia, you guys do webinars.
We do. And I think probably in the last 3 years, we went from doing zero webinars and exclusively live events to, I think this past year, we did almost 50 webinars.
Wow.
So we are definitely, that is a booming business for us. And
yeah. And when you say you do them, you're doing them for companies in the market.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so. Very much the same way we run our live events. You mm-hmm. know, you'll have an industry sponsor. We have usually around 200 average government attendees, and you're able to share your message as well as other thought leaders
okay.
to a great audience.
Well, let's talk about other types of events that have legs. So, Carrie, you mentioned like the briefings thing in the mm-hmm. in the late 80s, early 90s. Oracle literally built its business around weekly briefings around the country. The same briefing, same format. It was like a 7:30 to 9 thing. Continental breakfast, mm-hmm. information on the tool, mm-hmm. Q&A, and out the door by 9. But they did these literally in every major federal city around the country on a continuing basis.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on like that now? Aside from the roadshow aspect, what has legs?
Well, you mentioned the breakfasts. Luncheons definitely have legs. The on-site tabletop events, definitely super, super popular. Those that are on the agencies and bases.
Yeah.
Those are big. We talked about webcasts, webinars, still huge. Not really seeing that much on the virtual or the video conferencing quite yet. It's happening, but yeah. I'm not seeing a lot of it.
I've seen some people have some success with these virtual conferences, but I don't think that they've really found the same impact. I guess people go, but I don't really know what results from it.
Yeah, I haven't seen much in the way. I think Government Product News hosted one for more of a total product mm-hmm. audience, and that kind of makes sense. So if you're talking about services, I'm not sure what kind of legs they would have. Let's just do the short list on virtual events moving up the food chain. Obviously, webinars. Is there anything else there that people should be paying attention to? Are podcasts viable?
I think podcasts are interesting. I'm not sure that they're necessarily always run the right way. I think people still like events that are sort of a happening in a moment in time, and it's live, and it's personal, and it's real, as opposed to come visit my website and, you know, click on this, which I recorded a while ago, and it might still be relevant, but who knows?
It might not.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, let me ask one other question before we migrate away from that. Do CEUs help any of these?
Absolutely.
Yes.
I know that GovEvents has continued to expand the options and details of what sort of educational credit can you get from this event.
There's always a new one popping up.
And I love it because, you know, we partner with George Washington University, so we certainly see the value in that. And I can't imagine running a government-focused event without continuing education credits of some sort.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guests are Carrie Ray of govevents.com and Claudia Hoskey of fedinsider.com and Hoskey Communications. Let's talk about the alleged single vendor kind of event. Brocade, for instance, has its annual federal forum coming up June 17, and they do it at the Reagan Center. It's one-day event. I believe it's a full-day event. But they have a number of other companies co-sponsoring with them, and it is not about Brocade. It's about big data. how prevalent are these? How effective can these be? And after that, I have obviously a follow-up question. So, Claudia, you actually are working on that, on the Brocade event a little bit, right?
Sure, yeah. We're working with them on that. And I think it's going to be a very successful event. I think it's going to draw quite a few people, and they seem to have some phenomenal tracks. So, you know, I think certainly a company-sponsored event can attract the right audience, but it sort of depends on the goal. If the goal is to sort of get a widespread message out and get some promotion, that will certainly be accomplished. But if the goal is to really drill down into the right sector, into the right group, into potential buyers, I'm not sure that you will necessarily be hitting that goal.
But this is an educational type event.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. So, Carrie, what are you seeing?
I think Claudia read my notes, because that's exactly what I had here. It really depends what their goal is and who they're trying to attract.
Yeah.
I think they're good, viable events. I know VMware and Symantec, they both have their big government summits coming up as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that they will be successful. So I do think they're viable.
But in both cases, they probably also have other companies supporting them.
I'm sure, you know, absolutely.
Channel players, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, and the channel.
Complimentary.
Yeah. So, and you know, the interesting event from my perspective last year was the IMIX event last fall on selling IT to the government. So it was like Steve Charles' seminar on steroids. And they covered literally all aspects of selling IT to the government. And IMIX supports, I mean, number one, they just got bought by Arrow. Mm-hmm. And the deal is done as of yesterday or the day before.
Yeah, it was this week.
Yeah. But you know, they really put on a first-class event for being the first year. Did you guys go to that?
I did not.
We certainly are involved with
I
many
was speaking.
Events.
You didn't come.
Sorry.
Sorry.
We didn't get that personal invite, Mark.
No, you didn't send me anything. No, sure? I think it was very successful, and they did a great job. And Steve Charles is always amazing to hear speak. So
yeah, well, he was one of about 50 different people speaking that day, multiple panels, multiple tracks. But again, it was as much for the vendor community as it was for the if not more for the vendor community than for the federal IT community. How important is it, if a company wants to do this, to partner with a company that actually produces events? As opposed to attempting, you know, I've tried to do it myself. I produce my seminars on my own, but I'm not producing any exhibit-driven, big event on my own ever again.
Well, Carrie, I'm super interested to hear your thoughts on this one.
Okay, well, it goes back to goals. I think it depends what the goals of the organization are. If they're looking for a small, intimate affair, I think they probably could pull it off themselves. If they're looking for a bigger event, a couple hundred people, depending on their reach, it might be difficult without a producer, with someone that really has the experience, that has those connections. Content's king. Mm-hmm. So if they have the right program, the right speakers, the right topic, I think they'll do great. I think they'd probably do better if they did go the producer route.
I definitely agree. I think it works best with a producer. I think the goals of a lot of companies don't always readily translate into solid content, and so the attendees won't necessarily gain the value you are hoping they will. In addition, you know, you may not have the contact, like you said, Carrie. If the sales team is just promoting to their customers, then you're not really reaching new ones.
One of the factors that I think comes into play here is the ability of the producer to help select the right venue and then negotiate for the right venue. Because if a novice goes in to any major facility, hotel or otherwise, to negotiate on their own, you know, you're going to pay what factor of at least 1.5, maybe 2 more than you should.
Definitely. You will just get abused by hotels if you don't know what you're doing. And it's hard because to do events in hotels and other venues, it's expensive to begin with. So, you know, we've in my tenure with Bed Insider, we've had clients who have decided to pull events in-house and try to do it themselves. And I'd say most of them have ended up coming back to us and saying, okay, we really need a hand. We can't quite get this.
Yeah,
always looks easier than it really is.
Absolutely.
We'll bust the people from D.C. out to Douglas. No, you won't. Well, let's talk about, you know, how do you select a producer? So whenever anybody asks me this question, the first thing I say is pedigree. So
absolutely. Have you heard of them? Do people you know talk about them? What are they mm-hmm. saying? Do you hear about them on social media? I love looking up what other folks in this business are being, where they're mentioned on social media. If someone's at their trade show or at their conference, what people are saying on Twitter, like, oh God, this is terrible, or it's a giant commercial, or hey, this is awesome. This is great content. I think that's good. And also just looking for results. Like if you go to talk to a producer and they say, oh yeah, well, you know, we're going to have a ton of people. It's going to be great. I'm going to promise you the moon. And they can't actually produce any piece of paper or some kind of tangible, this is past performance, these are results, this is how we've done in the past, then that's definitely a red flag.
I agree. I think past performance is key. I think talking to others that have used that producer is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really going and seeing what's their longevity in the government industry? That's big too.
Yes.
There's a lot of big names out there that we've heard of, but they're new and they're new to this. And I think it's really a different animal.
I'm always intrigued when I see, you know, a big brand new event pop up. And I, you know, of course, in the industry, I always scroll to the bottom to see who's hosting it.
I yeah. do too.
And I'm like, what is this new LLC I haven't
yeah.
heard of before? Who are these people?
Like, or you have the major international conference producer that comes to B2G once a year or mm-hmm. once every other year or once a decade, mm-hmm. and they assume their name will carry it.
Yes,
absolutely.
And maybe yeah. for, you know, HQ out in Silicon Valley, ooh, this company is doing an event in D.C. We better be there.
Mm-hmm.
This company doesn't have a clue in D.C.
Yes.
The importance of selecting the right partners here really does have a huge impact on any success in the market. What about smaller companies? How you know, and when I'm talking about smaller companies, I mean, you know, literally down to maybe 25, 50 employees or under 500 employees. So the small range is large, and there's a lot of them. But, you know, oftentimes they might be left out. So how do they play?
I think that's tricky. You know, when you're working with a much smaller budget, choosing the right environment or the right investment is absolutely critical. And that's hard. That's definitely hard to do. I think partnering with larger companies, if you can, and using market development funds to support your efforts is a good approach, if you can. I also think webinars are a great resource because they're such lower budget. I know with our live events, you're usually talking multiple thousands of dollars just on cost alone before you even get to the cost to produce the event and to invite the attendees and to manage the registration and the website. So it's generally pretty hard. It's generally out of the question for a small business.
I agree. I think the way to go for the small company is definitely the webinars. At least if they're brand new, definitely get your feet wet there first. I wouldn't try to tackle any large event, certainly.
Yeah, and if the mm-hmm. webinar turns out bad, you don't evergreen it. You just kill it.
Right.
Well, actually, we have phenomenal software that we use, so we can edit our webinars.
Oh,
and so
cool.
If it doesn't go well, we can just fix it.
You can make it better.
And then you have a great, I mean, in a webinar sense, I love it because not only have you then got an event, it's also repurposable. So you can put it on your website, or you can reshare it with your other clients or potential clients, as opposed to a live event that's just sort of, it happened and it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right, we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We'll be back to wrap up B2G events after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. My guests are Carrie Ray, GovEvents.com, Claudia Hosky, FedInsider.com. Go to both, look them over carefully. Very cool websites, very cool companies. And I use GovEvents for my own seminars. I get a fair amount of traffic there. And I've partnered with Peg and Claudia Hosky on a number of things. Always turns out good from my point of view. Certainly hope it does from your point of view. So when you select an event to participate in, give me some tactics on promoting your presence there, because, you know, the event producer can take it so far, but they need help as well.
Yes. And I know for us, we always, usually my first move after creating an event website is to post it on GovEvents. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we also will post on GovLoop. We post on LinkedIn groups. We found LinkedIn to be a phenomenal resource for getting word out. And also Twitter. But in terms of the industry or the sponsor, I think a lot of times if they have a marketing list, it may not be the right people. And so the real key that I would love to see more of is sharing the event with your partners and with your customers and with your salespeople, because they're the ones who are out there and they may have resources or people or contacts that you don't, that they could share it with.
Yeah, one of the objections I run up against, especially with smaller firms, is why should I invite my customers to an event where maybe one of my competitors is going to be there? And my answer is pretty simple. If you're at an event, you want them there, because if you're a speaker at an event or a sponsor of an event, you're a player. If your customers don't know that, you know, there's reduced value for you.
Exactly. And if you're that afraid of your competition, then yikes.
Right, right.
This ain't the market to be in.
I would bring your customers out and just outshine the heck out of them.
Claudia, you brought this up. What's the role of social media in the events? I mean, you know, one of the things that that I've seen on your events is people tweeting from. And mm-hmm. Carrie, you've probably seen just a little bit of this as well.
Yeah, a little bit. I think social media can be an event's best friend or their worst nightmare.
Yes.
And particularly during the event. Claudia mentioned earlier, people can be tweeting in the middle of the event, this is great, this is horrible. And there's just that, it's great because you can really market your event before, during, after with social media. I'm not sure. I think it needs to be used a little bit more. Claudia, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that I know many a reporter and other folks who a major peeve is when you walk into a room and they announce, this is off the record, please no tweeting, please no recording. I know quite a few people who get miffed about that. And, you know, I think...
Depends on the venue.
Well, yeah. I think that there are events where social media is certainly... just more appropriate. If you're in a highly technical session, people probably aren't going to be tweeting about it. But in a lot of events, we definitely are tweeting. And, you know, like you said, it can be a good thing. It can be a bad mm-hmm. thing. It can also be a helpful thing. People can say, hey, the sound is having trouble, and maybe I didn't know, and I can go troubleshoot.
What about LinkedIn, Facebook, Google+, et cetera? Google+ has one aspect that the others don't, and that's that chat room kind of thing that I've never used, but I understand it's pretty cool.
I was really jazzed about Google+ when it first came out, and I was like first on board to want to beta test it, and I don't think I ever went back. I don't know it hasn't really done it for me, or I haven't just found the value in this market.
I haven't either.
There might be something out there,
but haven't quite found it.
Yeah. If anyone is using it, I'd love to hear how.
Yeah. The horse came out of the gates with four broken legs. So. Ouch. Well, let me ask a different question then. You've both been through my LinkedIn training. How did that work for you?
I thought it was great.
Awesome.
So helpful, even for someone that's been using it a couple years. Just great tips, ideas, a lot of good takeaways.
I thought I knew LinkedIn. I went to the training and I thought, let me do Mark a favor. I'll go to his training. We'll see what he knows that I don't. And I was blown away by how much I didn't know about LinkedIn and how many techniques and things you can do to enhance your presence, your profile, and your connections. It was incredible.
Yeah, and my learning curve doesn't stop there because they keep changing things. I have to go figure out how to keep doing certain things without the tool being quite the same.
Every time I get confused, I immediately check your page to see if you've written a little blurb about it.
Thank you. Thank you. It was solicited commercial. let's get back. You know, the big thing on events is ROI. And, you know, events can eat a big hole in the budget or they can eat a smaller hole in the budget. But you still have to justify your event expenditure. What are the best ways? What are the best metrics out there for determining success? Either one.
Well, it's definitely more for me. I think it's quality versus quantity.
Yes.
You can have thousands of people at your event, but only a few good ones.
Where are the trinkets?
Exactly. I said I would bring a pen back to my boss. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that one. So quality is key.
And I absolutely agree. And so I know a lot of folks in the area and out of the area who can throw a heck of a party with a lot of people. But at the end of the day, you really don't have the solid leads you were hoping for. I know in terms of our events, some of the statistics we tend to give people as the clients afterwards are, you know, how many people came, what type of people they were, what sector they're from, their seniority levels. Locations, you know, all we give them a lot of evaluation feedback, things like that. And I think that is pretty solid until you're able to follow it sort of down the sales chain and see how qualified those leads were or, you know, what sort of money may have resulted from that. And we always try to get that feedback from our clients so that we can share that with potential clients. Like, hey, you know, this we held this event. We brought in this many people. It represented this much potential money for the company. Boom. That's a good sales pitch.
Well, it's like the first thing I moderated for you guys a few years back, the fraud, waste, abuse thing. Mm-hmm. It was a significant size ballroom. There were only three or four vendors there. I think they were sponsors and one of them was on the panel with me. But otherwise, it was filled with govies. And there had to be 150 people from multiple agencies, from Baltimore, D.C., Northern Virginia, et cetera.
Yes.
But there wasn't literally no, there wasn't a bum in the lot.
Yes. Well, we've spent a lot of time working very hard to sort of maintain the educational and value and integrity of our events. So, you know, while some folks will have great cocktail parties, we really focus on the educational content and the value that the attendees will walk away with. So,
and that's really what they're looking for. They're looking for the content.
Yeah.
The cocktail party might be fun, but it's all about the content.
Mm-hmm.
And if the cocktail party's publicized, feds ain't coming.
That's right.
Exactly.
So give me some wrap-up thoughts here. Carrie, I'll start with you, please.
Events are still happening. They're going to happen. They're key to the learning and the growth for government.
So I had a friend in government once tell me, if I call any tech company in the market right now at breakfast and say, can you come to my office and tell me about your product? I'll have a meeting before lunch. And so getting the information or tell me about your product is really not necessarily what the government is looking for. So as Carrie said, content is key. And the way you're marketing it is key. You can't just go and shove products down people's throats. You have to give them some sort of educational experience or value or lesson that they can take back to their agency and use.
Yeah, and you made an unintentional point there, I think. The content has to be separate from the sales material.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
Ladies, thank you very much. My guests have been Carrie Ray of GovEvents.com and Claudia Hosky of Fed Insider. Again, go to both sites, more than worth your time. Sign up for the GovEvents and Fed Insider while you are there. This is not my day job. If your company needs help on the marketing side, particularly on social media, I don't do all social media, but there are very few people who do LinkedIn as well as I do, and I don't know of anybody who teaches it better than I do. So give me a shout, mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.